land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
And good evening, this is David Swanson back with you at the People Speak Radio, and we are privileged to have with us for the next hour the creator, the writer, director, producer of a wonderful new movie called Uncounted. The website where you can watch the trailer is uncountedthemovie.com, and with us is David Earnhardt. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
I'd love to focus 90% of this hour we've got on Uncounted and the issues in it, but could you give us the 60-second version of how you came to be someone who can make a movie this good?
Well, I appreciate that quite a bit. Well, I've been doing this kind of work for, for 30 years. I mean, starting in television, and I've had my own company for the last 15 years. But it's been more in the, educational video, non-broadcast. I mean, nice pieces, but never done a full-length documentary before. And very candidly, the issue and the urgency of this issue just drove me to it. I was one of those people that after the 2004 election, I'm just waiting around and waiting for the media to report on it and to talk about it and talk about some of the issues going on in 2004. And I was just naive enough to be stunned after the 2004 election, a couple days afterwards, where the media just pretty much went silent and wasn't really looking into things. Fortunately, there were a lot of people looking into things in the academic community, computer scientists, statisticians, attorneys were bringing cases, and journalists, alternative journalists, and bloggers. There was a ton of great research going on out there, and I just jumped on board and followed every bit of it and just kept going with it. And it's been a three-year journey, and this is where it landed. We finished it about 4 months ago, and we're just trying to get it out to as many people as we can.
Now, bizarre as this seems still to me, and will seem to you, of course, there are a lot of people out there who get their news from ABC and NBC and Fox, and who, when you say election fraud and election errors, think back to the 2000 election. Yet what you're going to talk about and what we see in this movie focuses on 2004 and 2006, elections that went beautifully and perfectly and there weren't any glitches. What's the deal? Why wasn't it the 2000 election that got you going?
Well, and I think that's a lot of what, what was going on with the trauma, frankly, of the country. I mean, that was just a purely traumatic situation. I mean, we'd never had an election like that. I mean, an election is decided in the Supreme Court, and all the drawn-out process, that was traumatic for people, and it was a, huge media story. And I think, coming up to 2004, I think a lot of people, including myself, thought it was going to happen again, thought it would probably be, going on. John Kerry saved up a big war chest of money for preparing for long legal battles. And when it didn't happen, when 2004 came out and there was this 3 million vote margin, that Bush had the lead in the tabulated vote, it was almost as if people said, hey, this is good enough, let's move on. And Kerry himself concedes, and it kind of gets lost that it still did come down to one state where there was just a ton of problems. I mean, simply because people were really watching there, that being Ohio. Had Kerry won Ohio, Kerry would be our president. And so, that leaves a misperception that all the problems were happening in Ohio, because some people at least have a sense of that. Really, Ohio much of the rest of the country, things were going on just as bad as Ohio. It's just that they were ready in Ohio. There was a lot of people waiting to look. There was a lot of video shot. And therefore, we focused a lot of our movie on the many horrible things and that happened in Ohio that tilted the election there toward Bush.
Well, obviously, there were some people who no doubt felt, as you suggest, that Kerry conceding and moving on and us avoiding that national trauma, as it's described, was a good and relieving thing. But certainly many of us and many people I ran into in the days and weeks and months after Kerry conceded were incredibly depressed and saw the continuation of a Bush presidency, a Bush-Cheney presidency, as far more traumatic than any election dispute. And I can recall the day after the vote, even before Kerry conceded, I was working at the AFL-CIO and going to my colleagues and saying, we need a national strike now.
Yeah.
And being laughed at, had people looking at me if I was crazy. Whereas 24 hours earlier, it was perfectly acceptable to be saying, everybody get ready, the legal teams are ready, thousands of lawyers prepared to react, and then it was just all gone in an instant, and it was insane to even bring it up. How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's really wild, because you see that continuing. I mean, there was a lot of reporting, and we're kind of jumping ahead, but in 2006, there was some, you know, I think of Lou Dobbs in particular, there was some reporting out there on electronic voting in the lead up to the 2006 election. You know, some pretty traumatic stuff that we have in our film where, you know, there you have, you know, CNN, Lou Dobbs on CNN talking about, you know, electronic voting machines. It can be hacked in 60 seconds. You can go in and change vote totals. It's easy. Academic studies showing this. Viruses pass from machine to machine that can affect millions of votes. I mean, they're saying this on national TV. The interesting thing is the election happens, those reports end. It's almost there's a disconnect between what could happen, but then there's not a willingness to go there and say, I wonder if it did happen. And I think, you know, the biggest clue in these things are exit polls. You know, exit polls are the one thing we've got, because it's very difficult to, as you know, track this stuff in electronic voting. It doesn't leave footprints. You can go in and do massive manipulation, and it's virtually undetectable. And the one clue we've got is when you've got a huge disconnect between what the tabulated votes show and then what the exit polls show, when exit polls historically have been 10-point accurate. Now, there's been some exceptions along the way, but never as massively as it was in 2004, and then once again in 2006. So, you know, that's just one thing we need to look at. Now, I don't know. I don't know really the answer to your question, except to say I think it's just a horrible thing to face. I mean, maybe we can face the possibility that something could happen, but when you really face the possibility that an election was just flat out manipulated, that literally millions of votes get lost or manipulated or shifted, that's a trauma that people just aren't willing to face, and the media just is certainly not willing to face that, and especially the idea that it could be intentional.
Well, there's a lot of questions coming out of that, but let me tell people how they can call in and get their questions into this conversation before we move on. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio with David Earnhardt, the producer and creator of Uncounted, the movie, which you can find at uncountedthemovie.com. And you can call in anywhere in the world, toll-free, 877-489-6350. That's 877-489-6350, or in the United States and Canada, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. David, let me ask you about exit polls as an example of what seems on the surface to be intentionally manipulative reporting by the media, in that when you read in the U.S. newspapers of elections in other countries, in South America, in Eastern Europe, you often see exit polls cited as evidence of possible election fraud. But when you read about exit polls in the United States in 2004, for example, the exit polls, when they differ from the official results, it's immediately apparent that the exit polls must be wrong because the official results must be right. Now, can you take that to be a fear of facing the truth, or is that intentional manipulation, or do we not have good reason to say in any cases where that's coming from?
You know, once again, I flat out just don't know. I just know what is reported. And, you know, the exit polls have been, you know, really discredited. In fact, they seem to have been taken out of the mix for the election coming up, which is really a frightening thing because, again, the exit polls are a safeguard we've got to really check and see how well these elections, the tabulations, how accurate the tabulations themselves are. All I know is that the exit polls have a 40-year history. They have been used in election after election. They're used where only a small, tiny percentage of the vote totals have come in that networks have felt comfortable making calls with confidence and for years on elections. And suddenly, in 2004, you know, they were flat out wrong across the board. I mean, flat out wrong and consistently favoring George W. Bush. And it's not like they were just wrong a little bit. They were off by 4.6%. Now, you know, that just kind of is, you know, to a statistician, that's mind-blowing because these things are supposed to be, with the sample sizes that they use, and this in 2004, it's 13,000 people, that is supposed to give you 19 out of 20 times you're going to be correct within 1%. And when you're off by 4.6%, I mean, that the odds of that is, it's like one in a million. It's like huge. It just did not happen. And the thing about exit polls that I know you know this, but just kind of framing it up, is that, you know, it is the most precise kind of poll. It's so different from these overnight polls that we see in the paper. They get a lot of play, a lot of interest. Obama's ahead, you know, Clinton's ahead, Clinton's behind, so on like that. These things are typically, you know, 1,200 people, you know, and they're asking them, who do you think you're going to vote? And that's also if you're going to actually vote, if the people they're talking to actually really do vote. The exit polls have more than 10 times that size, and they're asking people right after they come out of the booth, who did you just vote for? You know, and the only way they can be off is that people consistently are not representing the truth, and they're not representing the truth in a particular direction. It just defies all logic. It just defies, I mean, John Conyers says it in the movie, don't have the exact quote, but I mean, you know, that it's just, nearly all the experts that agree that the exit polls just, it defies logic, that it would be more likely that somehow the tabulated votes themselves were manipulated. So, you know, we just have to look at this.
It gets even more confusing, I think, for people, because maybe you can help me out and explain to me and everyone else what adjusted exit polls are, because, you know, tell me if I'm understanding this right. My impression is, because they were so wrong in 2004, they're now reluctant to let anybody see the actual exit poll results. Instead, as the official results start coming in, they adjust the exit polls to match the official results and then publish those as adjusted exit polls without telling anyone it's been adjusted. But you can find out if you ask. And I presumably think that's somehow honest because they've again suddenly lost the skill to do exit polls correctly.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, of course, just the opposite. It is dishonest because it is actually changing it to match it up, which has nothing to do. They're matching it up to the tabulated votes. And so basically it renders the exit polls meaningless, at least from a predictor standpoint. Why they say they're doing that is because a lot of the information they're reporting on, and that's all you basically hear about on the networks these days, is more the demographic information, not the predictor information. So they say they're adjusting it because it would throw off the demographic information if you were reporting on the actual exit polls, which are supposedly wrong, then the information they're reporting would not jive with the tabulated votes. I mean, that probably just confuses matters more. which, but unfortunately, that's what they say they're doing it for, is to somehow render the demographic information, like, you know, how many women voted for Obama, how many, you know, women voted for Hillary, that sort of stuff, and so that they can make more use of that stuff. But, you know, to adjust them basically renders them meaningless as far as a predictor completely. So that's a new phenomenon.
But it, my impression is, you know, other countries use exit polls to verify the results, to check whether there's fraud in their elections, whereas in this country, the U.S. media corporations, it's not even, you know, our government, it's the media corporations, use the exit polls to make predictions. And so
that's right.
If they're not working to make the predictions or they want to fudge it and get the prediction better in the final hours, that's all well and good, because the whole concept of using the exit polls to check the election isn't even on the radar screen.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is some movement. There are some people that are working to try to make that a reality, because if it's not going to be done by the networks, then the idea is, can we somehow come up with funding citizen audits? And you know, that is being done on a small level here and there. I mean, we were up in Ohio in 2006, and there's some great work going up there. Of course, there's limited funding, so they're just doing a precinct here, a precinct there, just to try to pick up some anomalies. And Jonathan Simon is in his group, Election Defense Alliance, they're trying to get some things together on that. And, you know, there is some discussion that I've heard about. Don't know if it's really happening, but I've heard that trying to get some real money into funding some citizen-oriented exit polls. But you're exactly right. That's exactly what the real value of it is to have a very solid, very statistically and scientifically sound method to just check the accuracy of these tabulated votes. And it's a safeguard. And, you know, the real irony, and I just know you felt this. I'm just sure you did. I mean, the real irony is right in the month, I think it was in the same month after 2004. Here, there's nothing going on in the media looking into 2004. Basically nothing being said about exit polls. Keith Olbermann was really the only person out there doing some real good legwork at that time. He was alone, basically, on the broadcast media. But then they, a huge story with the exit polls in Ukraine, which was a good story to be doing, but that was a huge story. And here it is going on right in our own country, and it's not being reported on. That was the ultimate irony. And they were using the same logic. You know, the exit polls didn't match up to the tabulated vote. This is a problem, big problem. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. In our own country, it's a non-story. Kind of, it was the ultimate irony.
In 2004 and 2006, certainly we know that some people did get their hands on the unadjusted exit polls. In the 2008 primaries that we've seen thus far for the Democrats and Republicans, I don't know whether that's the case. Have you seen any unadjusted exit polls?
No, I have not. But let me tell you, there was an interesting slip that occurred, and it was during the New Hampshire primary where there's a lot of stuff being looked in there where Obama, you know, led by 5% in precincts that had paper ballots, but he lost by 5% in precincts that voted electronically, and he was ahead in all the polls, including Clinton's own polls during that time, and he ended up losing. A lot of questions raised, or ended up doing a recount, but there's problems with the recount, so on like that. An interesting thing happened during that. I want to remember if I saw it on YouTube, but I heard it more about it being reported, was Chris Matthews on MSNBC said, I don't know if it was a slip, or I don't know if he really was just trying to say it was 2 o'clock in the morning. He's saying he saw unadjusted exit poll figures that showed Obama 8% ahead, and he's trying to figure this out. What happened? And so he said that on the air, but they are getting the hands on unadjusted exit polls has been, it just seems to be slammed shut. I mean, the real pioneer and the real, you know, frankly, hero of all of this is the work that Jonathan Simon did. He was ready in 2004. He got screenshots off the CNN website with the unadjusted numbers that were posted after midnight that night. And there, gosh, it happens again in 2006. You know, it was there again, and he got them. But so far, there's not been such luck in 2008. They've really seemed to have clamped down on that. So it's difficult to get those numbers.
The only thing I saw was on Super Tuesday, Matt Drudge, who is a source that has been known to completely fabricate things, so who knows, posted exit poll results for a number of the states on Super Tuesday. And then the way that various right-wing commentators like Rush Limbaugh were talking about the results, it was clear that they were looking at least similar numbers, if not Drudge's numbers. And, of course, they look at his website a lot, so it was probably the same numbers. And they showed huge victories for Obama that that at least to my mind, statistically, it was incredible, the shifts in a half dozen states. Did you see these numbers?
I did not see that, yeah. It's interesting, Drudge, though. That was, I just go back anecdotally for myself, it was his report that I saw the, you know, I'm sure like a lot of people in 2004, you know, I was out, you know, doing get out the vote type stuff. I'd never done that in my life, but I was just motivated for the first time. My wife was out with me and just a number of other friends. And, you know, I came back after doing a lot of that, just take a little break, and it was like 3:30 or so. And I went online to look and see, you know, wonder if there's anything on the internet about the exit polls and all that. And his was one of the reports, one of the first ones I saw that showed a Kerry, you know, insurmountable lead, in the exit polls. And it was kind of like, you know, and then I start, you know, you go different places. I think, I'm trying to remember what the other one, I think Reuters was where I saw something, and a number of others. And, you know, I just remember that feeling thinking, oh my gosh, you know, Kerry's going to do it, you know. And it was just really interesting watching it in the evening, just watching it shift. It was an odd feeling just to watch it shift and to watch the momentum of the night just slowly shift. And I remember, I wish I could, you know, I've want to find this particular piece of video. I remember, and I think it was ABC News, somebody actually saying on the air that the exit polls seem to be having a lot of problems, that the Bush, and already it was being put out there, that the Bush voters were reluctant to talk to the exit pollsters. I thought, and that's interesting that information's coming out. This is like 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night Central Time. And I'm going, and that is really interesting. That's already been floated. And, you know, that's what they ended up really trying to float when they tried to explain it months later, the Matovsky-Edison report, as far as what went wrong. But their own numbers, when you go deep into the report out of the executive summary, really show just the opposite. It was not, they couldn't find any evidence that there was a the so-called reluctant Bush factor. So it's never been really explained.
So we need either whistleblowers or we need to do our own exit polls. Let me tell people how to get in on this conversation from anywhere in the world. You can call in toll-free at 877-489-6350, or in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio with our guest David Earnhardt, the creator of the new movie Uncounted, which you can find at uncountedthemovie.com. And if you watch this movie, David, and I've seen it a few times now, and it's entertaining every time, it's not just informational, this is a movie that looks not just at the evidence of exit polls and not just at the problems with electronic voting machines, but at all sorts of tactics of voter repression and fraud and so forth. But there's definitely a focus on the electronic machines. What percentage of the problems with our election systems across the country now would you say is based in electronic machines? And what is more traditional, you know, non-technological means of fraud?
Well, I don't know how to divide it into the percentage. I do know that sometimes just plain old voter suppression gets underplayed. And I think that's really going to come into play a lot in the 2008 election, because especially with these new photo ID laws that are going into play, primarily, and this is where it gets into partisan politics. These are going into primarily, you know, Republican-dominated, you know, state legislations or voting in these laws. And this is going to cause a lot of, it's going to cause problems on a couple of different levels. I mean, it's going to be kind of a new form of electronic poll tax, if you will, that's going to basically take out a lot of people that are in some cases not going to be able to afford to get the new IDs, are just not going to be able to go to the trouble of getting it, and, you know, just a whole variety of reasons depending on how complex it was. I remember seeing this program recently on PBS where they focused in on one woman, and it was showing how in her particular, I think she was in Indiana, but I'm not certain, in her particular case, they just cost it out. It was going to cost her nearly $150 to do what she had to do, which included getting a passport and so on like that, before she could get the proper ID to vote. And she wasn't going to do it. I mean, she couldn't do it. This is not a woman that had $150 to spare. And these photo ID laws are, I mean, this is critical because it's going to take out a lot of people that are mostly Democratic voters. I mean, that's what the real game becomes in voter suppression is that groups of people are targeted that are particularly going to vote in one particular way. That's a lot of what you saw in Ohio. You saw in example after example where precincts did not have enough voting machines allocated to them. And these would be Democratic precincts, they would be even more specifically inner-city African-American precincts, and they didn't get the voting machines to do the job, so that ended up in these horrific long lines that we saw on the air, on the major networks that night, even after they called Ohio for Bush. So that kind of suppression, or the types of things where there's these voter registration errors, where people are taken off the rolls, you know, particularly with these electronic registration rolls. And a lot of these run by the same vendors that are running these, running our elections, basically, running the electronic or manufacturing the electronic voting machines. And suddenly you've got people that are being taken off the rolls. And again, what it appears to be is that it's primarily targeting people that are voting Democratic. So that's what happened a lot in Ohio. I mean, there's Robert F. Kennedy's study of the whole thing showed 72,000 people taken off the roll for registration errors. You know, 175,000 people that couldn't vote because the lines were too long and they couldn't stay in line. They had to get home. They had to get back to work or, you know, whatever. And, you know, another 30,000 for people that are just purged from the rolls. So, you know, the thing about voter suppression is that you can find it. I mean, you can analyze it, you can get it, and see what the problem is. You can quantify it, and you can argue about it, and you can call it what it is, and you can, you know, try to change it. And the difficulty with electronic voting, and that's what we just have to focus on both. The challenge with electronic voting is that mostly what you can do is show how easy it is to break into the machines and change things and how easy it is and how lack of security are or how shoddy the products are themselves or how they seem to have odd, you know, software things going on that almost seem, you know, appear to be intentional or something. You can show all that. It's much more difficult to show that something has actually happened, except then we get back to the exit polls and showing
exactly
things that are far off. So I don't know if I answered your question, but it's just both are very important, and we have to look at both of those situations.
I think that's an excellent answer. I want to bring a caller in on this conversation and see what sort of questions some other people have.
Great.
We have a caller from Michigan named Basima. Basima, thanks for calling the People Speak Radio.
Thank you, David, and thank you, David, for being on the People Speak. We need more people like you to speak out. My question is, shortly after what I've come to call the Florida fiasco in the Diebold machines, there was a congressional meeting held, and the creators and designers of the Diebold machines were asked to present their statements before Congress. I had caught it on, I believe, on the internet, and what they had said was not only do they believe that it is possible to corrupt the machines, as you believe, but they believe that the machines were, in fact, corrupted. Whatever happened with that, why haven't we heard anything, and why is there not an outcry in the United States of America when the makers of the machine tell you that they are corrupt?
Well, two things on that, and David, you might be able to help as well. I think actually there has been at least the beginnings of an outcry. I don't think that these, machines are as accepted by the public anymore. In fact, I think that's the one place where I think at least the days, and this is perhaps a start, it is certainly not enough to tell here, but the days of paperless touchscreen voting machines are numbered. State after state has at least legislated that you have to have a paper ballot as a result of that. Now, I don't think that's nearly enough. In fact, I think, you got to kind of take electronic voting machines out of the service completely. I mean, electronic voting and voting, they don't go together very well. It's just too easy to corrupt these machines. It's too easy to break in. It's just too difficult. I'm not familiar with the particular situation you're talking about in Florida, as far as, what particular thing on that. But I'm just kind of trying to respond that I think that people have started getting outraged. And what's happened on a real grassroots level, really it started happening in 2004 and is built to today, is a lot of these very small election integrity groups have formed across the country. And one of the things they've done, and they've been very effective in it, is they have gone in to election commissions that are considering buying these machines, and they're raising hell. They're raising a ruckus. They're going into these districts to these meetings where normally they don't get people coming in. And they're raising a lot of hell, and they're having some success in places after place to get it changed. And then ultimately some of this lobbying is why some legislation's gone in to at least get the idea of some sort of paper ballot associated with these machines. So I think we're seeing a lot of change, and I think that at least from the standpoint of touchscreen machines, paperless touchscreen machines, they're on their way out.
I hope you're right, David.
I tend to be an optimist, David. I sometimes listen to myself and wonder how much I'm saying it out of hope, but I do see at least a movement away from that, and that's a start.
What came out to my mind in the movie Uncounted about these machines, I mean, I think a lot of people understand that these are private corporations that we're putting this task in the hand of, and that these machines are questionable, and that some of these corporations, these two biggest corporations have very prominent Republican ties, and their heads have made statements to the effect that they're going to help the president win the next election. But what struck me in the movie was that, companies like Diebold make ATMs that print out receipts, but they can't make voting machines that print out receipts. There are video games, someone argued in the film, that in terms of protections against hacking have much stronger security software than voting machines. Why are we putting, as a society, so much more technological know-how and effort into ATMs and video games than into voting machines? Does that not appear on its face to be intentional?
Right. Well, I certainly have the same feelings myself. I mean, it appears that it's just not being, there's a lot of talk about the importance of our elections. There's a lot of talk about the integrity of our vote. But ultimately, the money's not there. They don't put the money into the process. I mean, the Help America Vote Act, the money that got put into it was to create this electronic voting industry. And that wasn't a lot of money anyway. It certainly wasn't a lot of money to develop that industry. And, some of it is that the products themselves are just shoddy. It would, it certainly raises the question, well, if you're just going to underfund it, but then push states toward going with electronic voting, but then not back it up with the kind of money that could really, you know, develop this, which really is like our defense industry. I mean, this is huge how important the electronic process is and the security of the electronic process. You know, I hear you. It begs the question, you know, why would more emphasis not be put on this? And you're right, it hasn't been at all. There's just no backup to this, and it seems to send the signal that we don't want things to run very well. And it annoys me to no end when I hear the term glitches. I mean, that's how it gets framed by the media often after the elections. I mean, it's like it's okay if it was just, you know, talk to a precinct, or we were just 20 votes off or whatever. You know, it's okay, and they're called glitches. You know, we don't call glitch, you know, you don't call it a glitch if you go in and there's money missing from your bank account. That's not a glitch. That is a major error. That is an affront to most people. But when a few votes are missing, it happens. It's, you know, it's almost like it's okay. It's not okay. I mean,
I think maybe the military was a very good analogy you made a minute ago, where do you just call it, you know, collateral damage and move on. And the waste and corruption and incompetence maybe does rival the election industry. We have to take a middle of the show break very soon, and I want to see if we can get in one more caller first. With a question from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Steve should be on the line. Steve, welcome to the People Speak Radio.
Well, thank you for taking my call, David. And David, you know, I'm, as you heard, from New Mexico, and I do believe took care of the problem with Diebold. It was a big problem in Bernalillo County, which pretty much gave New Mexico to Bush. But it won't happen anymore. In fact, Diebold kind of bowed out when we made legislation that we had to have a carbon copy of our vote. You know, they make most of the grocery store receipts and ATM receipts across New Mexico, but they can't seem to do it for when we're voting. I'm wondering what you think about this new kind of glitch in the election process, and that's the superdelegates. And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you guys for taking my question.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, you know, I'm going to admit something to you. I am ramping up on that one, but I got to tell you, that one frightens the heck out of me. I mean, you know, our own governor in Tennessee is a super delegate, and he was quoted as saying, I'm going to vote for whoever the heck I want to. I mean, I think what scares me about the super delegate process is the brokering that goes on in a situation like that, and the, you know, the deal making that goes on. It just sets up an atmosphere where it becomes backroom dealing type stuff. And that doesn't feel healthy at all. And it seems to invalidate the voters. You know, all that's gone on in voting in the primaries, to have this, you know, block of voters that can swing. And as I understand it, and David, you know, you might know more about this than I do, but as I understand it, it's all to try to make sure that it's not a split convention, and to try to, you know, keep more control on things so that it doesn't give off the appearance of a split party, and oh, horror, horror, if we had to go into a second ballot, you know, voting on things. And it frightens me. And I do think it's that kind of thing is a threat to the democratic process.
Well, I couldn't agree more that the whole system they have in place with the superdelegates is anti-democratic and leads to all sorts of corruption. But let me play the optimist for once, and you know, assuming that our big concern is that the election in November may be stolen, that there may be forces at work that will try to steal it for John McCain, then maybe the best thing that could happen would be for the public, the Democratic and independent public supporting Obama, to have to really fight to fight a theft of the nomination by Hillary Clinton and win that, and then go into November organized and motivated and prepared were when Obama pulls a John Kerry to say, no, 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 we've already fought for this, we're going to fight again. Is that overly optimistic, or what am I missing?
Well, I like hearing the vision. I mean, I do think that's the spirit of what this kind of battle is. I mean, I think if I were Obama, I would be thinking get 60%. I mean, I'd be thinking that's the mindset you have to go into with this thing. You got to win big if you're who he is, because you know, there is going to be, I mean, everything about the last 10 years just points to the fact that there's going to be some serious opposition, some serious manipulation, and it's going to be difficult to detect. Some of it's going to be very overt, though, and I think, you know, I mean, candidly, I think Barack Obama needs to get on board with this issue, because the very constituency that is giving him his strongest support right now, or a lot of his strongest support, which is students, and also, you know, just lots of different constituencies, are the very constituencies that are often targeted in voter suppression. I mean, students are, it's one of the worst right there, because they're able to make it real confusing for students as far as where you're located and what your ID says and what your voter registration card says. It's very frustrating for students to vote, and it makes often for a very passive situation where they just say it's not worth it, it's too much of a hassle to vote. And I mean, that's where Obama's been drawing a lot of his big crowds, so he needs to get on board with this issue, because it affects him directly. And I know it's politically complicated to get on board with this, but I hope he's at least talking about it and trying to figure out a way to make some statements about this. It would be very helpful to get this issue on the table if he would come out and say some things about it, say more about it. He said little things, but not much.
Yeah, he has said a little bit in with regard to New Mexico and Los Angeles,
right.
Has he not? But
that's
but,
right.
It would...
That's right. He has. Well, I think it's just like the media, though. It's the threading it together, you know, instead of isolated. Incidents type thing, which comes across as more anomalies instead of a pattern of fraud, which that's a difficult thing. But, you know, I think ultimately this issue is going to largely affect who gets elected president. And that's why he needs to be speaking to it as best he can, figure it out. And that's what the media needs to be focusing on. And they're not.
Well, let's talk about what people can do to move things in the right direction, and let's talk more about the film, Uncounted, when we come back from a short break. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio with our guest David Earnhardt, the filmmaker. The film is Uncounted, and you can see the trailer at UncountedTheMovie.com. When we come back from the break, we will be taking your calls from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free, 888-228-4494, and anywhere in the world, 877-489-6350. We'll be right back.
According to polls, a majority of Americans support the impeachment of Dick Cheney. To make people aware of this, the Honk to Impeach campaign has been organized. People will be carrying Honk to Impeach signs in front of congressional district offices and TV and radio stations. Visit ImpeachSpace.com and ImpeachCheney.org for updates of this effort. And don't forget to honk for impeachment.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
This land. Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you and me. This land is your land. This land is mine.
Join host Bessema Farhat on The People Speak with her guest, socially conscious rapper Son of Dunn, Tuesday, February 26th, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Please visit thepeoplespeakradio.net and make a difference for the better.
This land was made for you and me.
And welcome back. This is David Swanson, your host at the People Speak Radio, and our guest for the next half hour, maybe less than that at this point, is David Earnhardt, the writer, director, producer of Uncounted, a film about whether our votes are being counted or not. Let's talk a little bit about 2006, David, because we focused on 2004, where to some limited extent, at least people paying close attention, know that something may have gone wrong. But in 2006, the Democrats, as expected, won huge. Therefore, presumably, everything went right. And in fact, it's interesting that in the news the past couple of days, in Pakistan, the opposition parties won huge, and therefore, it's understood in the corporate press that everything went right, whereas we're hearing from those on the ground that all sorts of things went wrong, and ironically enough, we have Senator John Kerry over there assuring us that things went acceptably well.
Ironic is the word.
what may have gone wrong here in 2006 that people don't know about?
Well, I think you really nailed it in the framing of your question. I mean, I think that I think 2006, at least for me, was the most important part of the film, because that's the part where it was the most recent history. It's the part where there was a shift in power more toward the Democrats, and you know, it did create a perception that we're going in the right direction, and that was a very confusing moment for me in terms of how to handle it, because you know, the last thing you want is people relaxing going into 2008. And so, you know, I did just like what you should do, is just look close. And when you look close, you realize it didn't get better in 2006. It got, at best, it stayed the same, and it probably got worse. And that is because when you look closely at the, and again, this is the context where there was increased citizen vigilance. There was more media reporting. That's good. That's all really good. The problem is that more people were voting on these shoddy electronic voting machines that have worse security. So there's more machinery out there that are easy to break into. And then once again, you go to those exit polls and boom, they show a 4.6% difference, that 3 million votes were lost nationwide. And, you know, what that meant was that the Democrats were in a position to have had a huge landslide. I mean, there was a great study done out there by Election Defense Alliance called Landslide Denied, and from the study they did, the Democrats would have taken 50 seats instead of 30. And there was a huge, we go into it in the film, there was a huge drop-off in Republican support in that October month right before November. There was just a lot of things that went wrong during that month, and a lot of stuff going wrong with Iraq, and, you know, just a number of different things. And, you know, CBS came out with a poll right before the not too far before the election, I think it was about a week before, that showed a 19% gap. Now, this is one of those overnight polls, so not an exit poll, but a 19% gap. This is the largest gap they'd shown since they had done that poll. And then you go into Saratoga, and there was this huge undervote problem where 18,000 votes were, this was Catherine Harris's old seat, and 18,000 undervotes in Sarasota County, Democratic stronghold, that county, and the three other counties in that same congressional district, the undervotes were much less. I mean, in that county it was 13%, in the other counties it was 2-3%. And all those undervotes that was on machinery, it's like right what we have right in my precinct here in Tennessee, it was on paperless electronic voting machines. So, you know, it became critical in how we positioned that in the film, because really 2006 needed to be a warning that really this is not the time to relax. This is not the time to take the foot off the pedal. This is the time to push hard ahead and push for changes in our election system, because things were still a big problem. And, you know, we don't want to be in a position where one party has to win by 60% to win. And that's the kind of situation that I think we're headed into if we're not careful.
Again, I look at Pakistan, where it looks like President Musharraf may have stolen enough seats to prevent his own impeachment. And
right.
I have to wonder, if the Democrats had taken 50 seats instead of 30 in 2006, would Bush still be continuing on without any impeachment in
right.
the United States Congress?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, it might be, you know, I mean, this gets into almost political strategy type talk, but it is a reality, is that it does seem like the Democrats have been awfully timid since they've gained control. I mean, they just really haven't been bold at all. And I think that's a good point you make. Had there been a more clear majority, had the votes been more legit, and had this huge majority come in, it might have made it just politically more viable to be more bold, because they really haven't been. I mean, some of this for me just speaks to, I just don't know how much faith I've got the Democratic Party in general in being bold. They just seem like they try to out-Republican the Republicans, and they've been in that sort of mode for a number of years. But I don't think you're wrong that had there been a larger majority, it might have made a big difference on how the last 2 years have gone.
Yeah. It's hard to say exactly what would have been different, but something would have.
Absolutely.
It's interesting that in the film, Uncounted, there are examples of Democratic election fraud as well as Republican, and it's not a Democratic Party film, and in fact, the Democratic Party officially wants nothing to do with the issue.
Right.
And yet, when we talk about election fraud, we are often accused of being Democratic Party partisans. What actually is motivating you in this, and where does this break down? Is there Democratic fraud going on, or is it pretty much all Republican?
Yeah, the reality, and that's the way, you know, that's the challenge in doing a film like this, is that the reality is virtually all of the manipulation has been going in one direction in recent history, and that is a function of who is in control. And that's how this plays out. I mean, if you really take this over the big picture and go and look at the entire history of our country, I mean, shoddy elections, stolen elections, manipulated elections, it has been that way from day one. I mean, Andrew Gumbel wrote this great book called Steal This Vote, and he just kind of went through the entire history of the country. It's been with us forever. In fact, we know it. It's part of our knowledge base. It's taught to us in school about the political machines in the cities, you know. These are largely Democratic machines, you know, that were Tammany Hall and all that, you know, where, you know, votes, blocks were controlled, where ballots were, you know, ballot boxes were stuffed, so on like that. I mean, we know that Lyndon Johnson in 1948, you know, did he steal that election? You know, there's a lot of questions raised about, you know, John F. Kennedy in Chicago, the Chicago machine in 1960. You know, this has been with us, and it has flown different ways through time. And, you know, my motivation is pure and simple. When you vote, it ought to count. I'm like a lot of people, and I think it's almost all of us. I think it's 95% of us, if not more. You know, we're raised to believe that there's something important about democracy. We want to believe that that's the kind of country we live in. And the core of that is the sanctity of the vote, the ability as an ordinary citizen to hold our leaders accountable with the vote. And we all have a stake in that, because when things shift, you know, the party in control right now, things shift in 20 years, they're the ones that get manipulated against. And so, you know, you can either join the game and get into this really, you know, nasty kind of game of stealing votes back and forth, or you can really work hard for a system that makes sure that the votes are counted, they're all counted, and that the sanctity of the vote is what drives that. And that's what drives me. It does get difficult because of what's happened right now. It's hard for people, particularly Republicans, that see this movie, and a lot of Republicans come to screenings that see this movie, and that first part where there's a lot of focus on what happened in the 2004, there's so much, you know, it's almost like they got to bide their time to get through that part of the movie to see that it does broaden out, and that's how a film unfolds. It broadens out to a much larger issue. Now, we really don't go there because we're talking on such recent history. We don't go there with a lot of examples of Democratic fraud because there haven't been much in recent years. But historically, if we'd done a historical film and put it over 200 years, you'd have it all over the place. And that is the history of our country.
David, we've got less than 5 minutes left in the program.
Wow.
And I want to get to a couple of quick topics. One question that this discussion raises for me is, how much of this fraud that seems to be going on, and in large part we know is going on, is a top-down creation, and how much of it is the creation of a mass movement on the part, in the case of Republican fraud, of Republican backers who believe it is actually the end justifies the means, and that it's right for them to engage in these activities? Because clearly, this is not just one phone call from George Bush or Karl Rove to the Secretary of State of Ohio. This is people on the ground making these decisions with these machines, with this intimidation, with these mailings. What's driving this?
You know, David, that is one of those things where I just don't know. I just know what I really try to focus on the film is what is happening. And, you know, what is happening is, you know, what we talk about and why it's happening and where it's coming from. It's really difficult to say. My own personal view is that, you know, these kinds of things can be, just like policy decisions, can be put in motion. And it just kind of plays itself out. You know, it can be put in motion. For example, you know, HAVA came about, you know, as what seemed to be a very, you know, a nice, gentle piece of legislation to try to make our elections run more fairly. But HAVA created electronic voting and has created the huge mess that we're in now. And then when you look closely at it, you realize that Bob Ney in Ohio was behind this bill, was a big supporter of it. And, you know, Bob Ney, he's not doing well these days.
I mean, he's behind bars.
That's right. And so, you know, I don't, anything at this point can only be speculative. But, you know, I just think that something like this doesn't happen accidental. It has to be things put in motion, and then it ends up playing out like these you know, voter ID laws, the picture ID laws. I mean, this is very much tied in with the whole Attorneygate stuff going on, where you know, attorney generals in states are put under pressure to prosecute voter fraud. Well, voter fraud doesn't exist in this country. It just doesn't exist. It barely exists. They've not, as much pressure as they put on these attorney generals, they couldn't find voters that are selling their votes or voting twice. It's a fake problem, and yet because of that, they're trying to create these laws that are going to disenfranchise millions of voters, primarily Democratic voters. Now, that's planned policy decision to try to put that kind of stuff in motion. It just doesn't happen out of thin air. So, say it again.
I'm learning something every minute here, but we don't have any minutes left, and I have to thank you for coming on the program. It's been terrific hour.
Thank you. If people are interested in the DVD, go to our website, because they can get that and have their own house parties and share it with others. It's uncountedthemovie.com.
Indeed. People should go watch the trailer, get the DVD, invite your friends over, have an event in your town. It's uncountedthemovie.com. And if you happen to live in Virginia, as I do, we are privileged to have David Earnhardt coming to join us tomorrow evening in Charlottesville, Virginia, to show the film and lead a discussion afterwards. And you can go to uncountedthemovie.com or charlottesvillepeace.org to find out about that. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio, and next Tuesday, same hour, 8 to 9, our host Basima Farhat will interview Son of Nun, who is a socially conscious rapper who is involved in all sorts of activism that I keep running into. And the next day, Wednesday, 8 to 9, next week, I will be hosting and interviewing Tracy Barker, who says that she was, as others we have interviewed, were sexually assaulted by employees of Halliburton, and Halliburton is doing nothing about it. Thanks for being with us. This is David Swanson at thepeoplespeakradio.net saying goodnight.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the table by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.